I hate this creature I'm chained to. I hated him the moment I saw his bestial, leering face. And here I've been locked in his noxious embrace for the 35 years this waltz has lasted.
This week on Selected Shorts, the witty Dorothy Parker.
Do you really know a lot of people that say she's good looking? You must have a wide acquaintance among the astigmatic, haven't you, Freddie? Why, I'm not being any way at all. It's simply one of those things. Either you see it or you can't. Now, to me, Edith looks like something that would eat her young.
I'm David Sedaris, and you're listening to Selected Shorts from PRI, the program that brings you great short fiction read live on stage at Symphony Space in New York City. Dorothy Parker was the reigning queen of the Algonquin Round Table, where writers for the smart magazines of the 1920s and 1930s met for lunch and to skewer each other. Her wickedly funny stories for The New Yorker, among other outlets, showed an uncanny ear for the peevish, pretentious, and self-deluded. Here's a selection of her best, read by the best. First, Here We Are, in which a honeymooning couple starts to get to know each other, with unexpected results. The reader is Jane Alexander, an award-winning stage and film actor who also ran the National Endowment for the Arts for a few years. Here she is performing Here We Are.
The young man in the new blue suit finished arranging the glistening luggage in tight corners of the Pullman compartment. The train had leaped at curves and bounced along straightaways, rendering balance a praiseworthy achievement and a sporadic one. And the young man had pushed and hoisted and tucked and shifted the bags with concentrated care. Nevertheless, 8 minutes for the settling of 2 suitcases and a hat box is a long time. He sat down, leaning back against bristled green plush in the seat opposite the girl in beige. She looked as new as a peeled egg. Her hat, her fur, her frock, her gloves were glossy and stiff with novelty. On the arc of the thin, slippery sole of one beige shoe was gummed a tiny oblong of white paper, printed with the price set and paid for that slipper and its fellow, and the name of the shop that had dispensed them. She had been staring raptly out of the window, drinking in the big weathered signboards that extolled the phenomena of codfish without bones and screens no rust could corrupt. As the young man sat down, she turned politely from the pane, met his eyes, started a smile, and got it about half done, and rested her gaze just above his right shoulder. "Well," the young man said. "Well," she said. "Well, here we are," he said. "Here we are," she said, "aren't we?" "I should say we were," he said. "Yep, here we are." "Well," she said. "Well," he said. "Well, how does it feel to be an old married lady?" "Oh, it's too soon to ask me that," she said. "At least, goodness, we've only been married about 3 hours, haven't we?" The young man studied his wristwatch as if he were just acquiring the knack of reading time. "We have been married," he said, "exactly 2 hours and 26 minutes. "My," she said, "it seems like longer." "No," he said, "it isn't hardly 6:30 yet." "It seems like later," she said. "I guess it's because it starts getting dark so early." "It does at that," he said. "The nights are going to be pretty long from now on." "Well, it starts getting dark early." "I didn't have any idea what time it was," she said. "Everything was so mixed up. I sort of don't know where I am or what it's all about. getting back from the church and then all those people and then changing all my clothes and then everybody throwing things and all. Goodness, I don't see how people do it every day. Do what? He said. Get married, she said. When you think of all the people all over the world getting married just as if it was nothing. Chinese people and everybody. I mean, just as if it wasn't anything. Well, let's not worry about people all over the world, he said. Let's don't think about a lot of Chinese. We've got something better to think about. Well, what do we care about them? I know, she said, but I just sort of got to thinking of them, all over everywhere, doing it all the time. Getting married, you know. And it's such sort of a big thing to do, you know. And it makes you feel queer. You think of all of them, all doing it just like it wasn't anything. And how does anybody know what's going to happen next? Let them worry, he said. We don't have to. We know darn well what's going to happen next. Well, we know it's going to be great. Well, we know we're going to be happy, don't we? Oh, of course, she said. Only you think of all the people and you have to sort of keep thinking. It makes you feel funny. An awful lot of people that get married, it doesn't turn out so well. And I guess they all must have thought it was going to be great. Come on now, he said. This is no way to start a honeymoon with all this thinking going on. Look at us, all married and everything done. The wedding all done and all. Oh, it was nice, wasn't it? She said. Did you really like my veil? You looked great, he said. Just great. Oh, I'm terribly glad, she said. Ellie and Louise looked lovely, didn't they? I'm terribly glad they did finally decide on pink. They looked perfectly lovely. Listen, he said, I want to tell you something. When I was standing up there in that old church waiting for you to come up and I saw those two bridesmaids, I thought to myself, well, I never knew Louise could look like that. Why, she'd have knocked anybody's eyes out. Oh, really? Funny. Of course, everybody thought her dress and hat were lovely, but a lot of people seemed to think she looked sort of tired. People have been saying that a lot lately. I tell them I think it's awfully mean of them to go around saying that about her. I tell them they've got to remember that Louise isn't so terribly young anymore. And they've got to expect her to look like that. Louise can say she's 23 all she wants to, but she's a good deal nearer 27. Well, she was certainly a knockout at the wedding, he said. Boy! I'm terribly glad you thought so, she said. I'm glad someone did. How did you think Ellie looked? Why, I honestly didn't get to look at her, he said. Oh, really? She said. Well, I certainly think that's too bad. I don't suppose I ought to say it about my own sister, but I never saw anybody look as beautiful as Ellie looked today, and always so sweet and unselfish, too. And you didn't even notice her. But you never pay attention to Ellie anyway. Don't think I haven't noticed it. It makes me feel just terrible. It makes me feel just awful that you don't like my own sister. I do so like her, he said. I'm crazy for Ellie. I think she's a great kid. Don't think it makes any difference to Ellie, she said. Ellie's got enough people crazy about her. It isn't anything to her whether you like her or not. Don't flatter yourself that she cares. Only the thing is, it makes it awfully hard for me you don't like her. That's the only thing. I keep thinking when we come back and get in the apartment and everything, it's going to be awfully hard for me that you don't want my own sister to come and see me. It's going to make it awfully hard for me that you won't ever want my family around. I know how you feel about my family. Don't think I haven't seen it. Only if you don't ever want to see them, that's your loss, not theirs. Don't flatter yourself. Oh, come on, he said. What's all this talk about not wanting your family around? Why, you know how I feel about your family. I think your old woman... I think your mother's swell. And Ellie, and your father, what's all this talk? Well, I've seen it, she said. Don't think I haven't. Lots of people, they get married and they think it's going to be great and everything, and then it all goes to pieces because people don't like people's families or something like that. Don't tell me. I've seen it happen. Honey, he said, what is all this? What are you getting all angry about? Hey, look, this is our honeymoon. What are you trying to start a fight for? I guess you're just feeling sort of nervous. Me? She said. What have I got to be nervous about? I mean, my goodness, I'm not nervous. You know, lots of times they say that girls get kind of nervous and yippy on account of thinking about, well, it's like you said, things are all so sort of mixed up and everything right now. But afterwards, it'll be all right. I mean, look, honey, you don't look any too comfortable. Do you want to take your hat off? And let's don't ever fight, will we? I'm sorry I was cross, she said. I guess I did feel a little bit funny, all mixed up and then thinking of all the people all over everywhere and then being sort of way off here all alone with you. It's so sort of different. It's sort of such a big thing. You can't blame a person for thinking, can you? Yes, don't let's ever, ever fight. We won't be like a lot of them. We won't fight or be nasty or anything. Will we? You bet your life we won't, he said. I guess I will take this darn old hat off, she said. It kind of presses. Just put it up on the rack, will you, dear? Do you like it, sweetheart? Looks good on you, he said. No, but I mean, she said, do you really like it? Well, I'll tell you, he said. I know this is the new style and everything like that, and it's probably great. I don't know anything about things like that, only I like the kind of hat like that blue hat you had. Gee, I like that hat. Oh, really? She said, well, that's nice. That's lovely. The first thing you say to me as soon as you get me off on a train away from my family and everything is that you don't like my hat. The first thing you say to your wife is you think she has terrible taste in hats. That's nice, isn't it? Now, honey, I never said anything like that. I only said, what you don't seem to realize, she said, is this hat cost $22. $22. And that horrible old blue thing you think you're so crazy about, that cost $3.95. I don't give a darn what they cost, he said. I said I like that blue hat. I don't know anything about hats. I'll be crazy about this one as soon as I get used to it. Only it's kind of not like your other hats. I don't know about the new styles. What do I know about women's hats? It's too bad, she said, you didn't marry somebody that would get the kind of hats that you'd like. Hats that cost $3.95. Why didn't you marry Louise? You always think she looks so beautiful. You love her taste in hats. Why didn't you marry her? Oh, now, honey, he said, for heaven's sake. Why didn't you marry her, she said. All you've done ever since we got on this train is talk about her. Here I've sat and sat and I've just listened to you saying how wonderful Louise is. I suppose that's nice, getting me off all here alone with you and then raving about Louise right in front of my face. Why didn't you ask her to marry you? I'm sure she would have jumped at the chance. There aren't so many people asking her to marry them. It's too bad you didn't marry her. I'm sure you'd have been much happier. Listen, baby. While you're talking about things like that, why didn't you marry Joe Brooks? I suppose he could have given you all the $22 hats you wanted, I suppose. Well, I'm not so sure. I'm not sorry I didn't, she said. There. Joe Brooks wouldn't have waited until he got me all off alone and then sneered at my taste in clothes. Joe Brooks would never hurt my feelings. Joe Brooks has always been fond of me there.
Yeah, he said. He's been fond of you. He was so fond of you, he didn't even send a wedding present. That's how fond of you he was.
I happen to know for a fact, she said, that he was away on business, and as soon as he comes back, he's going to give me anything I want for the apartment.
Listen, he said, I don't want anything he gives you in our apartment. Anything he gives you, I'll throw right out the window. And that's what I think of your friend Joe Brooks. And how do you know where he is and what he's going to do anyway? Has he been writing to you?
I suppose my friends can correspond with me, she said. I didn't hear there was a law against that.
Well, I suppose they can't, he said. And what do you think of that? I'm not going to have my wife getting a lot of letters from cheap traveling salesmen.
Joe Brooks is not a cheap traveling salesman, she said. Is he? He is not. He gets a wonderful salary.
Oh, yeah? Where did you hear that?
He told me so himself, she said.
Oh, he told you so himself, he said. I see. He told you so himself.
You've got a lot of right to talk about Joe Brooks, she said. You and your friend Louise, all you ever talk about is Louise.
Oh, for heaven's sake, he said. What do I care about Louise? I just thought she was a friend of yours, that's all. That's why I ever even noticed her.
Well, you certainly took an awful lot of notice of her today, she said, on our wedding day. You said yourself when you were standing there in the church, you just kept thinking of her right up at the altar. Oh, right in the presence of God. And all you thought about was Louise.
Listen, honey, he said, I never should have said that. How does anybody know what kind of crazy things come into their heads when they're standing there waiting to get married?
I was just telling you that because it was kind of crazy. I thought it would make you laugh. I know, she said. I've been all sort of mixed up today, too. I told you that. Everything's so strange and everything. And me all the time thinking about all those people all over the world. And now us here all alone and everything. I know you get all mixed up, only I did think when you kept talking about how beautiful Louise looked, you did it with malice and forethought.
I never did anything with malice and forethought, he said. I just told you about Louise because I thought it would make you laugh.
Well, it didn't, she said.
No, I know it didn't, he said. It certainly did not. Ah, oh, baby. And we ought to be laughing, too. Hell, honey lamb, this is our honeymoon. What's the matter?
I don't know, she said. We used to squabble a lot when we were going together and then engaged and everything, but I thought everything would be so different as soon as we were married. And now I feel so sort of strange and everything. I feel so sort of alone.
Well, you see, sweetheart, he said, we're not really married yet. I mean, well, things will be different afterwards. Oh, hell, I mean, we haven't been married very long.
No, she said.
Well, we haven't got much longer to wait now. Well, we'll be in New York in almost 20 minutes. Then we can have dinner and sort of see what we feel like doing. Or, I mean, is there anything special you want to do tonight?
What? She said.
What I mean to say, he said. Would you like to go to a show or something?
Why, whatever you like, she said. I sort of didn't think people went to theaters and things on their... I mean, I've got a couple of letters I simply must write.
Now, don't let me forget. Oh, he said, you're going to write letters tonight?
Well, you see, she said, I've been perfectly terrible. What with all the excitement and everything, I never did thank poor old Mrs. Sprague for her berry spoon. And I never did a thing about those bookends that the McMasters sent. It's just too awful of me. I've got to write them this very night.
And when you finish writing your letters, he said, maybe I could get you a magazine and a bag of peanuts. What? She said. I mean, he said, I wouldn't want you to be bored. As if I could be bored with you, she said. Silly, aren't we married? Bored? What I thought, he said. I thought when we got in, we could go right up to the Biltmore and anyway leave our bags and maybe have a little dinner in the room, kind of quiet, and then do whatever we wanted. Well, let's go right up there from the station. Oh, yes, let's, she said. I'm so glad we're going to the Biltmore. I just love it. The twice I've stayed in New York, we've always stayed there, Papa and Mama and Ellie and I, and I was crazy about it. I always sleep so well there. I go right off to sleep the minute I put my head on the pillow. Oh, you do? He said. At least, I mean, way up high, it's so quiet. We might go to a show or other tomorrow night instead of tonight, he said. Don't you think that would be better? Yes, I think it might, she said. He rose, balanced a moment, crossed over and sat down beside her. Do you really have to write those letters tonight? He said. Well, she said, I don't suppose they'd get there any quicker than if I wrote them tomorrow. There was a silence with things going on in it. And we won't ever fight anymore. Will we? He said. Oh, no, she said. Not ever. I don't know what made me do like that. It all got so sort of funny, sort of like a nightmare, the way I get thinking of all those people getting married all the time. And so many of them, it goes to pieces on account of fighting and everything, and I got all mixed up thinking about them. Oh, I don't want to be like them. But we won't be, will we? Sure we won't, he said. We won't go all to pieces, she said. We won't fight. It'll be all different now that we're married. It'll all be lovely. Reach me down my hat, will you, sweetheart? It's time I was putting it on. Thanks. Ah, I'm so sorry you don't like it. I do so like it, he said. You said you didn't, she said. You said you thought it was perfectly terrible. I never said any such thing, he said. You're crazy. All right, I may be crazy, she said. Thank you very much, but that's what you said. Not that it matters. It's just a little thing. But it makes you feel pretty funny to think you've gone and married somebody that says you have perfectly terrible taste in hats. And then goes and says you're crazy, besides. Now listen here, he said. Nobody said any such thing. Why, I love that hat. The more I look at it, the better I like it. I think it's great. That isn't what you said before, she said. Honey, he said, stop it, will you? What do you want to start all this for? I love the damned hat. I mean, I love your hat. I love anything you wear. What more do you want me to say?
Well, I don't want you to say it like that, she said.
I said I think it's great, he said. That's all I said.
Do you really? She said. Do you honestly? Oh, I'm so glad. I'd hate you not to like my hat. It would be, I don't know, it would sort of be a bad start.
Well, I'm crazy for it, he said. Now we've got that settled, for heaven's sake. Ah, baby. Baby lamb. We're not going to have any bad starts. Look at us. We're on our honeymoon. Pretty soon we'll be regular old married people. I mean, in a few minutes we'll be getting into New York and then we'll be going to the hotel and everything will be all right. I mean, well, look at us. Here we are, married. Here we are. Yes, here we are. Aren't we?
Jane Alexander read Dorothy Parker's Here We Are. I'm David Sedaris. After a brief break, Parker goes on a bender. You're listening to Selected Shorts, recorded live in performance at Symphony Space in New York City and in other venues nationwide from PRI, Public Radio International. Welcome back to Selected Shorts. I'm David Sedaris. For more information about the stories you're hearing, the readers who are reading them, or about the Selected Shorts writing contest, you can go to selectedshorts.org or wnyc.org/shorts. And please write and tell us what you think of today's program. We're relishing Dorothy Parker on this show. The word witty is, I think, overused. Not that many people are witty. Witty is smart and funny. And when I say smart, I mean like smarter than everyone else. To me, David Rakoff was witty. Dorothy Parker was certainly witty. Next, a freewheeling monologue by a jealous woman fueled by an endless round of cocktails. Dana Ivey makes every slur count in Just a Little One.
I like this place, Fred. This is a nice place. How did you ever find it? I think you're perfectly marvelous, discovering a speakeasy in the year 1928. And they let you right in without asking you a single question. I bet you could get into the subway without using anybody's name, couldn't you, Fred? Oh, I like this place better and better now that my eyes are getting accustomed to it. You mustn't let them tell you this lighting is original with them, Fred. They got the idea from the Mammoth Cave. This is you sitting next to me, isn't it? Oh, you can't fool me. I know that knee anywhere. You know what I like about this place? It's got atmosphere. That's what it's got. If you would ask the waiter to bring a fairly sharp knife, I could cut off a nice little block of the atmosphere to take home with me. It would be interesting to have for my memory book. I'm going to start keeping a memory book tomorrow. Don't let me forget. Why, I don't know, Fred. What are you going to have? Then I guess I'll have a highball, too. Please, just a little one. Is it really real scotch? Well, that will be a new experience for me. You ought to see the scotch I've got home in my cupboard. At least it was in the cupboard this morning. It's probably eaten its way out by now. I got it for my birthday. Well, it was something. The birthday before, all I got was a year older. This is a nice highball, isn't it? Well, 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 to think of me having real scotch. I'm out of the bush leagues at last. Are you going to have another one? Well, I shouldn't like to see you drinking all by yourself, Fred. Solitary drinking is what causes half the crime in the country. That's what's responsible for the failure of prohibition. But please, Fred, tell him to make mine just a little one. Make it awfully weak. Just cambric scotch. It will be nice to see the effect of veritable whiskey upon one who has been accustomed only to the simpler forms of entertainment. You'll like that, Fred. You'll stay by me if anything happens, won't you? I don't think there will be anything spectacular, but I want to ask you one thing, just in case. Don't let me take any horses home with me. It doesn't matter so much about stray dogs and kittens, but elevator boys get awfully stuffy when you try to bring in a horse. You might just as well know that about me now, Fred. You can always tell that the crash is coming when I start getting tender about our dumb friends. Three highballs, and I think I'm St. Francis of Assisi. But I don't believe anything is going to happen to me on these. That's because they're made of real stuff. That's what the difference is. This just makes you feel fine. Oh, I feel swell, Fred. You do too, don't you? I knew you did because you look better. I love that tie you have on. Oh, did Edith give it to you? Wasn't that nice of her? You know, Fred, most people are really awfully nice. There are darn few that aren't pretty fine at heart. You've got a beautiful heart, Fred. You'd be the first person I'd go to if I were in trouble. I guess you are just about the best friend I've got in the world. But I worry about you, Fred. I do so, too. I don't think you take enough care of yourself. You ought to take care of yourself for your friend's sake. You oughtn't to drink all this terrible stuff that's around. You owe it to your friends to be careful. You don't mind my talking to you like this, do you? You see, dear, it's because I'm your friend that I hate to see you not taking care of yourself. It hurts me to see you batting around the way you've been doing. You ought to stick to this place where they have real scotch that can't do you any harm. Oh, darling, do you really think I ought to? Well, you tell him just a little bit of one. Tell him, sweet. Do you come here often, Fred? I shouldn't worry about you so much if I knew you were in a safe place like this. Oh, is this where you were Thursday night? I see. Why, no, it didn't make a bit of difference, only you told me to call you up, and like a fool, I broke a date I had just because I thought I was going to see you. I just sort of naturally thought so when you said to call up. Oh, good Lord, don't make all that fuss about it. It really didn't make the slightest difference. It just didn't seem a very friendly way to behave, that's all. I don't know. I'd been believing we were such good friends. I'm an awful idiot about people, Fred. There aren't many who are really your friend at heart. Practically anybody would play you dirt for a nickel. Oh, yes, they would. Was Edith here with you Thursday night? This place must be very becoming to her. Next to being in a coal mine, I can't think of anywhere she could go that the light would be more flattering to that pan of hers. Do you really know a lot of people that say she's good looking? You must have a wide acquaintance among the astigmatic, haven't you, Freddie dear? Why, I'm not being any way at all. It's simply one of those things. Either you see it or you can't. Now, to me, Edith looks like something that would eat her young. Dresses well, Edith? Dresses well? Are you trying to kid me, Fred, at my age? You mean you mean it? Oh, my God. You mean those clothes of hers are intentional? My heavens. I always thought she was on her way out of a burning building. Well, we live and learn. Edith dresses well. Edith's got good taste. Yes, she's got sweet taste in neckties. I don't suppose I ought to say it about such a dear friend of yours, Fred, but she is the lousiest necktie picker out I ever saw. I never saw anything could touch that thing you have around your neck. All right, suppose I did say I liked it. I just said that because I felt sorry for you. I'd feel sorry for anybody with a thing like that on. I just wanted to try to make you feel good because I thought you were my friend. My friend. I haven't got a friend in the world. Do you know that, Fred? Not one single friend in this world. All right. What do you care if I'm crying? I can cry if I want to, can't I? I guess you'd cry, too, if you didn't have a friend in the world. Is my face very bad? I suppose that damned mascara has run all over it. I've got to give up using mascara, Fred. Life's too sad. Isn't life terrible? Oh, my God, isn't life awful? Oh, don't cry, Fred. Please don't. Don't you care, baby. Life's terrible, but don't you care. You've got friends. I'm the one that hasn't got any friends. I am so. No, it's me. I'm the one. I don't think another drink would make me feel any better. I don't know whether I want to feel any better. What's the sense of feeling good when life's so terrible? Oh, all right then. But please tell him, just a little one, if it isn't too much trouble. I don't want to stay here much longer. I don't like this place. It's all dark and stuffy. It's the kind of place Edith would be crazy about. That's all I can say about this place. Well, I know I oughtn't to talk about your best friend, Fred, but that's a terrible woman. That woman is the louse of this world. Makes me feel just awful that you trust that woman, Fred. I hate to see anybody play you dirt. I'd hate to see you get hurt. That's what makes me feel so terrible. That's why I'm getting mascara all over my face. No, please don't, Fred. You mustn't hold my hand. That wouldn't be fair to Edith. We've got to play fair with the big louse. After all, she's your best friend, isn't she? Honestly? Do you honestly mean it, Fred? Yes, but how could I help thinking so when you're with her all the time? When you bring her here every night in the week? Really? Only Thursday? Oh, I know. I know how those things are. You simply can't help it when you get stuck with a person that way. Lord, I'm glad you realize what an awful thing that woman is. I was worried about it, Fred. It's because I'm your friend. Why, of course I am, darling. You know I am. Oh, that's just silly, Freddy. You've got heaps of friends. Only you'll never find a better friend than I am. No. I know that. I know I'll never find a better friend than you are to me. Just give me back my hand a second till I get this damn mascara out of my eye. Yes, I think we ought to, honey. I think we ought to have a little drink on account of our being friends. Just a little one, because it's real scotch and we're real friends. After all, friends are the greatest thing in the world, aren't they, Fred? Gee, it makes you feel good to know you have a friend. I feel great. Don't you, dear? And you look great, too. I'm proud to have you for a friend. Do you realize, Fred, what a rare thing a friend is when you think of all the terrible people there are in this world? Animals are much better than people. God, I love animals. That's what I like about you, Fred. You're so fond of animals. Look, I'll tell you what let's do. After we've had just a little highball, let's go out and pick up a lot of stray dogs. I never had enough dogs in my life, did you? We ought to have more dogs. And maybe there'd be some cats around if we looked. And a horse. I've never had one single horse, Fred. Isn't that rotten? Not one single horse. I'd like a nice old cab horse, Fred. Wouldn't you? I'd like to take care of it and comb its hair and everything. Oh, don't be stuffy about it, Fred. Please don't. I need a horse, honestly. I do. Wouldn't you like one? It would be so sweet and kind. Let's have a drink, and then let's you and I go out and get a horsey, Freddy. Just a little one, darling. Just a little one.
Dana Ivey performed Dorothy Parker's Just a Little One. When I was first introduced to Dorothy Parker's work when I was in high school, it was presented to us as, aren't these stories funny? And they were funny, but I think what made me love Dorothy Parker is how sad and how deep her stories are. When you read something like Big Blonde, it is just heartbreaking, or Song of the Shirt. And writing-wise, often I think when people are funny, people don't give them credit for their writing, just mainly for the result of their writing, like, oh, that made me laugh. But when you look at Dorothy Parker sentence by sentence, she's an astonishing writer, and a writer who still feels so modern. I think as modern today as she did in the 20s and 30s when she wrote her best material. I mean, I've seen a couple of movies based on things that Dorothy Parker wrote. And while they're okay, they don't come close to the pleasure of reading her. Because what you don't get in film adaptations is you don't get the rhythm and the exactitude of her writing. I don't think the sorrow shines through either, the way that it does on the page, or if you're hearing somebody like Jane Alexander or Parker Posey read her out loud. They're getting the laugh, but as readers, I think they realize that there's a lot below the surface. The heroine of our last tale, the waltz, could certainly do with a drink. She's stuck with an inept partner whose dancing skills leave a lot to be desired, and she's keeping up an edgy inner rant that contrasts with her simpering exterior. Here's Parker Posey reading at the Getty Center in Los Angeles.
Why, thank you so much. I'd adore to. I don't want to dance with him. I don't want to dance with anybody. And even if I did, it wouldn't be him. He'd be well down among the last 10. I've seen the way he dances. It looks like something you do on St. Walburga's night. Just think. Not a quarter of an hour ago, here I was sitting, feeling sorry for the poor girl he was dancing with, and now I'm going to be the poor girl. Well, well, isn't it a small world? And a peach of a world, too. A true little corker. Its events are so fascinatingly unpredictable, are not they? And here I was, minding my own business, not doing a stitch of harm to any living soul. And then he comes into my life, all smiles and city manners, to sue me for the favor of one memorable mazurka. Why, he scarcely knows my name, let alone what it stands for. It stands for despair, bewilderment, futility, degradation, and premeditated murder. But little does he what. I don't want his name either. I haven't any idea what it is. Jukes, would be my guess from the look in his eyes. How do you do, Mr. Jukes? And how is that dear little brother of yours with the two heads? Ah, now why did he have to come around me with his low requests? Why can he let me lead my own life? I ask so little, just to be left alone in my quiet corner of the table to do my evening brooding over all my sorrows. And he must come with his bows and his scrapes, and may I have this one's. And I had to go and tell him that I'd adore to dance with him. I cannot understand why I wasn't struck right down dead. Yes, and being struck dead would look like a day in the country compared to struggling out a dance with this boy. But what could I do? Everyone else at the table had got up to dance except him and me. There was I, trapped. Trapped like a trap in a trap. What can you say when a man asks you to dance with him? I most certainly will not dance with you. I'll see you in hell first. Why, thank you. I'd like to awfully, but I'm having labor pains. Oh, yes, do let's dance together. It's so nice to meet a man who isn't a scaredy cat about catching my beriberi. No, there was nothing for me to do but say I'd adore to. Well, we might as well get it over with. All right, Cannonball, let's run out on the field. You won the toss. You can lead. Why, I think it's more of a waltz, really, isn't it? We might just listen to the music a second, shall we? Oh, yes, it's a waltz. Mind? Why, I'm simply thrilled. I'd love to waltz with you. I'd love to waltz with you. I'd love to waltz with you. I'd love to have my tonsils out. I'd love to be in a midnight fire at sea. Well, it's too late now. We're getting underway. Oh, oh dear. Oh dear, dear, dear. Oh, this is even worse than I thought it would be. I suppose that's one dependable law of life. Everything is always worse than you thought it was going to be. Oh, if I had any real grasp of what this dance would be like, I'd have held out for sitting it out. Well, it will probably amount to the same thing in the end. We'll be sitting it out on the floor in a minute if he keeps this up. I'm so glad I brought it to his attention that this is a waltz they're playing. Heaven knows what might have happened if he thought it was something fast. We'd have blown the sides right out of this building. Why does he always want to be somewhere that he isn't? Why can't we stay in one place just long enough to get acclimated? It's this constant rush, rush, rush. That's the curse of American life. That's the reason we're all of us so... Ow! For God's sake, don't kick, you idiot! This is only second down. Oh, my shin. My poor, poor shin that I've had ever since I was a little girl. Oh, no, no, no. Goodness, no. It didn't hurt the least little bit. And anyway, it was my fault. Really. It was. Truly. Well, you're just being sweet to say that. It really was all my fault. I wonder what I'd better do. Kill him this instant with my naked hands, or wait and let him drop in his traces. Well, maybe it's best not to make a scene. I guess I'll just lie low and watch the pace get him. He can't keep this up indefinitely. He's only flesh and blood. Die he must, and die he shall for what he did to me. I don't want to be the oversensitive type, but you can't tell me that kick was unpremeditated. Freud says there are no accidents. I've led no cloistered life. I've known dancing partners who have spoiled my slippers and torn my dress. But when it comes to kicking, I am outraged womanhood. When you kick me in the shin, smile. Maybe he didn't do it maliciously. Maybe it's just his way of showing his high spirits. I suppose I ought to be glad that one of us is having such a good time. I suppose I ought to think myself lucky if he brings me back alive. Maybe it's captious to demand of a practically strange man that he leave your shins as he found them. After all, the poor boy is doing the best he can. Probably he grew up in the hill country and never had no larnin'. I bet they had to throw him on his back to get shoes on him. Yes, it's lovely, isn't it? It's simply lovely. It's the loveliest waltz. Isn't it? Oh, I think it's lovely, too. Why, I'm getting positively drawn to the triple threat here. He's my hero. He has the heart of a lion and the sinews of a buffalo. Look at him. Never a thought of the consequences. Never afraid of his face. Hurling himself into every scrimmage, eyes shining, cheeks ablaze. And shall it be said that I hung back? No. 1,000 times no. What's it to me if I have to spend the next couple of years in a plaster cast? Come on, Butch, right through them. Who wants to live forever? Oh dear. Oh, he's all right, thank goodness. For a while, I thought they'd have to carry him off the field. Oh, I couldn't bear anything to happen to him. I love him. I love him better than anybody in the world. Oh, look at the spirit he gets into a dreary, commonplace waltz. How effete the other dancers seem beside him. He is youth and vigor. He's courage. He is strength and gaiety. And ow! Get off my instep, you hulking peasant. What do you think I am anyway, a gangplank? Ow! No, of course it didn't hurt. Why, it didn't a bit, honestly. And it was all my fault. You see, that little step of yours, well, it's perfectly lovely, but it's just a tiny bit tricky to follow at first. Oh, did you work it up yourself? You really did? Well, aren't you amazing? Oh, now I think I've got it. Oh, I think it's lovely. I was watching you do it when you were dancing before. It's awfully effective when you look at it. It's awfully effective when you look at it. I bet I'm awfully effective when you look at me. My hair is hanging along my cheeks. My skirt is swaddled about me. I can feel the cold damp of my brow. I must look like something out of The Fall of the House of Usher. This sort of thing takes a fearful toll of a woman my age. And he worked up this little step himself, he with his degenerate cunning. And it was just a tiny bit tricky at first, but now I think I've got it. 2 stumbles, slip, and a 20-yard dash. Yes, I've got it. I've got several other things, too, including a split shin and a bitter heart. I hate this creature I'm chained to. I hated him the moment I saw his bestial, leering face. And here I've been locked in his noxious embrace for the 35 years this waltz has lasted. Is that orchestra never going to stop playing, or must this obscene travesty of a dance go on until hell burns out? Oh, they're going to play another encore. Oh, goody. Oh, that's lovely. Tired? I should say I'm not tired. I'd like to go on like this forever. I should say I'm not tired. I'm dead, that's all I am. Dead, and in what a cause. And the music is never going to stop playing. And we're going on like this, double time Charlie and I, throughout eternity. I suppose I won't care anymore after the first 100,000 years. I suppose nothing will matter then, not heat, nor pain, nor broken heart, nor cruel, aching weariness. Well, it can't come too soon for me. I wonder why I didn't tell him I was tired. I wonder why I didn't suggest going back to the table. I could have said, let's just listen to the music. Yes, and if he would, that would be the first bit of attention he has given it all evening. George Jean Nathan said that the lovely rhythms of the waltz should be listened to in stillness and not be accompanied by strange gyrations of the human body. I think that's what he said. I think it was George Jean Nathan. Anyhow, whatever he said, and whoever he was, and whatever he's doing now, he's better off than I am. That's safe. Anybody who isn't waltzing with this Mrs. O'Leary's cow I've got here is having a good time. Still, if we were back at the table, I'd probably have to talk to him. Look at him. What could you say to a thing like that? Did you go to the circus this year? What's your favorite kind of ice cream? How do you spell cat? I guess I'm well off here, as well off as if I were in a cement mixer in full action. I'm past all feeling now. The only way I can tell when he steps on me is that I can hear the splintering of bones. And all the events of my life are passing before my eyes. There was a time I was in a hurricane in the West Indies. There was the day I got my head cut open in the taxi smash. There was the night the drunken lady threw a bronze ashtray at her own true love and got me instead. There was that summer that the sailboat kept capsizing. Ah, what an easy, peaceful time was mine until I fell in with Swifty here. I didn't know what trouble was before I got drawn into this danse macabre. I think my mind is beginning to wander. It almost seems to me as if the orchestra were stopping. It couldn't be, of course. It could never, never be. And yet, in my ears, there is a silence like the sound of angel voices. Oh, they've stopped, the mean things. They're not going to play anymore. Oh, darn. Oh, do you think they would? Do you really think so if you gave them $20? Oh, that would be lovely. And look, do tell them to play this same thing. I'd simply adore to go on waltzing.
Parker Posey performed The Waltz by Dorothy Parker. I'm David Sedaris. Thanks for joining me for Selected Shorts. Next week, Hard Luck and Hard Choices, and stories by Amy Hempel and Tobias Wolff. Selected Shorts is produced by Catherine Minton and was directed by B.D. Wong and Isaiah Sheffer. Our radio producer is Sarah Montague. The readings are recorded by Miles B. Smith, and our mix engineer is Jim Briggs III. Our guest commentator is Hannah Tinty. Our production intern is Malcolm Donaldson. Our programs presented at the Getty Center in Los Angeles are recorded by Phil Richards. Our theme music is David Peterson's That's the Deal, performed by the Deerdorf Peterson Group. Major support for Selected Shorts has been provided by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, publishers of the Best American Short Stories, edited in 2012 by Tom Parada. Additional support has been provided by the Dungannon Foundation, sponsor of the Ray Award for the short story, the Henry Nias Foundation, the New York Community Trust's Program for Performing Arts Groups, Seedlings Foundation, and Warren and Jane Weiss and the Applebaum Foundation. Selected Shorts has also been supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts and with public funds from the New York State Council on the Arts. Selected Shorts is brought to you in part by Zabars.com, delivering New York original toasting bagels, coffee, smoked salmon, babka, and more throughout the 50 states, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. More information at Zabars.com/shorts. Support for this program comes from this station and public radio international stations nationwide and from the PRI Program Fund. Selected Shorts is a co-production of Symphony Space and WNYC Radio in New York and is distributed nationwide by PRI Public Radio International.
PRI, Public Radio International.